So now they're using the medication and weight loss surgery too. They use it as a, Reagan Chastain always says, they're holding your health hostage for a weight loss ransom, right?
Welcome to Behind the Bite, where we delve deep into the real life struggles and triumphs surrounding food, body, and weight. I'm Dr. Christina Castagnini, a psychologist and certified eating disorder specialist, bringing you a unique blend of personal experience as a recovered individual with over 25 years of professional expertise. In each episode, we'll share the courageous journeys of individuals who have faced these challenges firsthand, alongside insights from dedicated professionals in the field. Whether you're seeking healing, inspiration, or simply a deeper understanding, this podcast is here to empower you on your own path to a better life. Join us as we explore stories of resilience, discuss the latest insights, and strive to foster a community of support and growth. Together, we can break down barriers, challenge stigma, and pave the way towards healing and living authentically. Well, hello everyone. Welcome to today's show. In this episode, I am talking with Dr. Jenny Talbert, a chiropractor and founder of Cole Park Chiropractic in Springfield, Missouri, who is doing something that honestly should not feel revolutionary in healthcare, but somehow it still is. Dr. Talbert practices trauma-informed, weight-neutral care rooted in health at every size principles, and she's deeply passionate about helping patients feel safe, respected, and actually listened to in medical settings. And part of why this conversation is so powerful is because she's lived this herself. Jenny shares what it's like growing up in a larger body during the height of the 90s diet culture, how studying nutrition and working in healthcare actually pushed her deeper into restriction, fasting, orthorexia, and atypical anorexia, and how years of chasing, quote unquote, health eventually led her to realize she had completely lost her trust in her own body. We're also going to talk about the shame and stigma larger body people experience in healthcare, why so many patients avoid doctors altogether, the dangerous reality of BMI-based medical denial, GLP-1s, weight loss culture and medicine, and what happens when providers stop blaming bodies and actually start treating human beings. And honestly, what I love most about this conversation is that Jenny brings so much compassion, humor, honesty, and hope to a topic that is incredibly painful for so many people. So if you've ever felt judged, dismissed, shamed, or unseen in a medical setting, I really think this episode's gonna hit home. I'm gonna go get Jenny. All right. Well, Jenny, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, I'm really excited to hear your personal story and also just more about the work you're doing. So if you wouldn't mind just, starting wherever you're comfortable.
Yeah. Sharing. Okay, perfect. Well, I really appreciate being on the show. I've gone back and listened to lots of episodes and I was like, this is exactly me. So lots of people, I think, that will resonate with my story as well. So, just a side note, I am a chiropractor and I'm a health at every size chiropractor, which is, we're kind of a very small group, but growing because I'm building it. And, I have always lived in a larger body my whole entire life since I was a child. My siblings are thin, but I am not. So genetics are strong in my family for that. And, in the sense of my connection with my body and disordered eating and all of that, growing up in a larger body in the 90s was fun, to say the least. My parents luckily are like so amazing and I didn't have a lot of direct negativity in that part of my life. But, of course my mom's like always dieting. So there's some of that that comes in. I didn't really go on my first diet until I was in was in seventh or eighth grade. In eighth grade, I did Weight Watchers. So that you have to like, I went with one of my friends, she invited me to come and I was like, did you just pick your only fat friend to go with you? It was very weird because we'd never really talked about doing this before, but we were like the only, like the two fat girls in our group. So it was, and I was like, yeah, sure. Like, that doesn't sound that bad. Let's go for it. And so, unfortunately, she ended up with a very severe eating disorder after that. Hospitalized and had her gallbladder removed. It was really, and I didn't like think about it. And this is me reflecting back. that, oh, this start that we thing that we did together, was the start of that for her. And that was, it was so sad. And I was pretty lucky to not, I wasn't bullied or I was, you know, I was this really smart kid, valedictorian. I did, you know, I did really well in school, but when I got to, and I dieted on and off, but you know, nothing really that was significant in high school. In college, I had a really great time in college and it was so fun. And but midway through, I switched my major because I knew I was going to chiropractic school, but I switched my majors from biology to nutritional sciences. Mm-hmm. And that was in partly, mostly because to go kind of pre-med, there wasn't a pre-med degree at our school. So we had to sort of pick something. Mm-hmm. And we got to junior year and they wanted us to take like entomology or zoology. And I go, no, I want to learn about humans at least. So I switched to nutritional sciences, but, and in the back of my brain, and I'm sure other people that have degree in nutritions, this is what happens, but you're like, oh, is this finally it? Am I going to learn something to finally like shrink my body? Mm. And it was the first time I ever learned that 1 pound of fat equals X number of calories. And I was like, oh, this is simple. It's a math equation. You just like work out a little bit more or like eat a little bit less. And then magically your body changes. And that's what we were taught all throughout school. And I was like, okay, well I can try that. So I attempted to do that type of low calorie thing. It didn't really, my body was always like, this is just what you weigh. Like just stay, just stay there. And I didn't really have too many body image issues. I kind of got out relatively unscathed from the nutrition besides the low calorie thing, but that was 2007 or 8. So kind of in the middle of all of that, when I got to chiropractic school, so chiropractic school, we're learning all about being a musculoskeletal physician and how we can diagnose and treat, and diet and exercise and quote unquote obesity came up a lot. And it's just so weird when you're sitting in class and you're talking about all the problems of being, you know, being obese, quote unquote obese. And like, you're just sitting there like, yeah, that's me though. Like, it's just, it's so awkward to sit there and just hear all this crap that people say about folks that look like you. And it's just embedding more of that shame that comes with it.
Can I ask a question too? So like for people listening, I get what you're saying, cause I'm like in the, you know, this is my specialty, right? But like, I think there's confusion with people when they hear like the words like fat or quote unquote obesity. And for you, maybe could you explain to people listening who are just not in the know about like what words to use or what they mean or like why it's in quotes for the word obesity? Because sure. I think a lot of people are really not aware of what to use or what to say or what those words mean. So
I think this is a really important question, because when we think of the word obesity or obese, it's a medicalization of a person in a larger body. It's the only one of the only quote unquote diseases, it's now considered a disease, that doesn't have shared symptomology. The word obesity doesn't have a shared symptomology. It's just a body size, which is the only condition that's out there. So when we think about that word, it's a pathologizing of a certain body size, which we don't do for height or eye color or shoe size. And so the fat activism community has reclaimed a very neutral word, neutral in the sense of fat just equals there is more fat on your body, or you can identify with several types of that word. But it's a word that has a lot of stigma. It has a lot of power behind it, and it's been used against people for a long time. But those of us in the community have decided that this is a word that is, we can make it neutral. We can just make it to say, I am describing myself. I am fat. I have brown hair. I am Caucasian. I have white skin. You know, all of those things is just a collection of characteristics. when we get labeled as obese or, you know, whatever, morbidly obese, whatever word you want to put on it, it has in the medical world has so much stigma behind it and so much history as well. And the Latin word just means to eat oneself fat, like, or like larger, which is a very strange way to put a very strange word to put on a whole group of people that can have a lot of different reasons why they're larger. So it's a word that it took me a long time to be able to say the word fat in a way that was very neutral. And I'm so thankful I have that word now, because it really catches people off guard sometimes when I call myself fat. They're like, "You're not fat, you're beautiful." And you're like, "I don't know what that means. Like, I'm both. Like, I don't know." You know, so I try to educate people. But for folks that don't want to use that word, or maybe that's just they're not quite ready, I will definitely say larger body or higher weight. Mm-hmm. Those are the two that I will use.
Yeah, because I do think, to your point, when people describe, like, "I'm tall, I'm short, I'm whatever," right? Like, I think there is a hesitancy to be like, "Oh, yeah, this person's fat, thin." To think like that they're saying something derogatory or mean. And so I'm glad you're explaining it that way. Versus saying, I mean, I hear the word, the O word. It's like, and I was in the medical field for a long time, and it's like, that is awful.
It's really hard. I do not use it at all in my practice. I don't use it as a diagnosis. I don't use it for patients. And it's noticeable because people don't want to hear that. They just don't want to hear it. It's not a thing. So the continuation into this story is that in chiropractic school, I developed an autoimmune thyroid condition wasn't sure if it was kind of like Hashimoto's. I didn't have symptoms, but I started getting, my labs were kind of getting off and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And that really was the kicker that threw me into like wellness and diet culture, because I had a fellow chiropractor that was like, "You have to go gluten-free or else." Like, it was just like, "This is what's causing your thyroid to malfunction." And it's pretty common. The gluten-free and Hashimoto's community is pretty strong. But that definitely set off a health journey, quote unquote, because it started out gluten-free. And then I read a book about paleo. Is it okay if I say all these?
Oh, of course. Yes. Because okay. I mean, yeah. People have heard these terms.
Okay. Yeah. Found the book about paleo, and I was again like, "Oh, this is it. This is the answer. I've been eating too many carbs." And so like started cutting carbohydrates, and this is a very typical path. Then I went into, paleo was taking out, I don't know, just good things like sugar and, you can eat honey, but, you know, and then I learned about the Whole30, and then I was like, "Oh, this is it. You have to like take out whole groups of food. This is what's going to finally make me thin." And then of course, that wasn't enough. So I still wasn't becoming as small as I wanted to be, or that I was supposed to be based off of my height and BMI, which was so flawed, which is a whole nother conversation. And so I started to do intermittent fasting. That's the next step, as well as the food restriction, the group restriction. And that wasn't enough. And so then I started multi-day fasting, and that's anorexia at that point. So of course, when you're in a larger body, it's not called anorexia. It's called atypical anorexia, which we know is weird. And I didn't know that was what was happening to me. I just was just trying to like, I did lose quite a bit of weight, but it was always just like, what is the next thing to do to keep it off, to keep going, to keep losing the weight that I needed to. And for me, it was like, and to make my thyroid normal, you know, which it did normalize. It like went back to normal. We don't really know why. So I was like, "Oh, it must have worked." Not knowing that that in the future, which is now, that my thyroid was continuing to grow. I have nodules on it, and it's actually in 2 weeks I have to get it removed. And so it didn't, it still happened. It's okay. But the kind of getting back into that really quick, the those restricting the food groups and feeling the purity that I was like, I can do this. Like, I look how good I am. I'm so good at restricting. Oh man. You know, people be like, you have so much willpower. You're so good. How do you do it? And I'm just like, I don't know, hair flick, you know, just like, I just do it. You just like, don't eat anything. You just don't do those things. But in that whole time period of the worst of my, I'll put that in the orthorexia and anorexia category, I moved to a really small town that didn't have any restaurants. I didn't really have any friends. It was like, oh, this is perfect. Again, it was like, this is it. I figured it out. I just can't have the food temptations. If I don't have any friends, and I don't have any restaurants, and I don't have anywhere to go, then I can restrict forever. Like, it was just this weird, it was so weird when you, like, looking back at it, that it's just wacky. But, so I was doing all this stuff, and I started to gain weight back around year five, which is very typical. Between 5 and 6 years, most people start gaining weight back. And I was like, I don't know. There was something that shifted just a little bit. And I go, I don't know if I can do anything more. Like, I was thinking about doing like a 7-day fast. Like, I mean, because it was, that's what people were doing these things. And I was like, I just don't know if I can do it. So one day, this was the big shift for me. I was listening to a Keto for Women podcast, like, and she had mentioned in this keto diet podcast, health at every size. Like, someone came on, a guest, and mentioned it. And she was like, you know, you can be healthy and still weigh more. And I was like, I don't understand. It was the first time somebody had actually, I heard it out loud. Because I always felt that I was kind of healthy, but then because I was larger, I wasn't. Like, it was like the instant negation of that. So I remember I listened to this podcast. I ordered the book through like interlibrary loan to be able to read the Health at Every Size book. And I read it and I go, huh, this is weird and interesting. Maybe I am wrong about something. And it just started breaking my brain. Like, slowly started breaking down all of this stuff that I had been learning. And at the same time, I happened to move from this really tiny town in Maine all the way to Portland, Oregon, Portland is an excellent place because there's a lot of fat positivity there. There's a lot of eating disorder therapists. It was just a much more progressive city in that sense. So I've read Health at Every Size. And then that led me to read Body Respect. That led me to read You Have the Right to Remain Fat. And then I just started like reading everything. And I was like, oh my goodness. I was so wrong in so many ways. And I think I have a problem. Like, I think that there's something. Cause I was having a hard time restricting anymore. Like I just was getting really like mentally, I couldn't stop thinking about food, but then I was afraid to eat it. And I had all these rules. So I met another healthcare provider in Portland and she's like, maybe you should see the eating disorder dietitian at our clinic. And I was like, that sounds like a really good idea. Mm-hmm. So I found a Health at Every Size, or eating disorder dietitian. And we worked through, I read intuitive eating and we worked through intuitive eating. And then I started to give myself unconditional permission to eat. Like, it was just like all the little pieces, I started taking away the food rules. And I'm saying this, it sounds like it was so quick. It was like a 3-year process probably to kind of unlearn a bunch of that. And I realized that I felt better. I wasn't afraid to go out with friends because I actually really do need a lot of friends. And I was very thankful for that to have in Portland. And then I started to think about how I could change the way that I was practicing because I was in the very weight-centric model for everywhere. When I got to Portland, it was in 2018, right? And then 2019 was when I was going through most of the initial part of my disordered eating treatment. And then the pandemic hit, right? And then like, it was just, which was actually good because it let me, because of course I gained weight in that process. Most everyone does. I was very nervous about that part because I did gain all the way back and a lot more than I originally was. And I was like, when is the weight gain going to stop? Like, stop? When does it stop? And my therapist was like, we don't know exactly. You know, like that was really hard. And because when I was losing all the weight, I would see 20 patients a day. Every single patient would comment and say, oh my God, you look so great. Oh my God, you look so great. What are you doing? What are you doing? And so it was reinforced. And then all of a sudden I'm not getting that. I'm gaining weight back, but I'm in a new practice. So people didn't know me as thin as I was. So I had this, it would have been much harder to do it while I was in that practice that I was very thin in, because people, like, then they start looking at you, go, are you okay? Are you doing okay? You know, how's your health? Like, is your thyroid okay now? You know, they don't want to ask you why you're gaining weight, but they don't say it out loud. Cause I'm their doctor. But I see them more frequently. So it's a little awkward. Yeah. I don't know.
But that's such a good point that you're bringing up, is like these external comments and what people say and how much influence that has on the eating disorder and like what you feel about yourself, right? It's just like you said, if you hadn't moved from Maine to Portland, you would have had a whole different experience, or if the pandemic hadn't happened, or I think even people listening are going, yeah, that's why I don't want to do treatment. I'm so scared of that exact thing you're talking about, like not knowing what is going to happen to my body. Mm-hmm. And that fear. Yeah. So I'm curious, like, if you could talk about that experience more, because that is everyone's biggest fear. Mm-hmm.
It was the absolute hardest part, because I knew that I was enjoying eating so much, even though it was scary. Mm-hmm. You pick a food, whatever you're, I think one of the first things I ate was like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich on white bread or something. Like, I was just like, and so I ate like four of them in 2 days, and I go, that was good. That's good. So I was really enjoying the food part with the body part. I think the hardest thing there, and like how I worked through it, was my therapist, we talked a lot about body checking, because for me, one of my triggers for for starting a plan, or, you know, starting Monday sort of thing, was clothes being too tight and some sort of like sensory thing with clothing. We'll just put it like that way. So like something on my arms, whatever it was. So we had a strategy that I would get rid of all of the clothes that had buttons or zippers first, and only allow myself to wear clothes that were really stretchy, that could expand. And I got rid of my scale. That was the first thing. I bought clothes. I just kind of bought like an interim clothing wardrobe, because I didn't know what size it was going to be by the end of all of it. And it's a lot of fear, because you go, like, the larger you get, the harder it is to buy clothes and the more expensive it is. And, I was never very thin, but I was definitely in straight sizes for a short time, and that didn't last very long. But so I bought clothing that didn't cause me to immediately want to check my body, like feel the fat on my stomach or feel the fat on my arm or see it in the mirror. So I reduced how much I was looking in the mirror. I changed my wardrobe. I started to think about how I was touching my body and like trying to say, like, yes, I feel that that is larger. Fact, move on, you know, like trying not to just make it is larger. Thus, I just need to do this. Thus, I have to go down the rabbit hole each time. And I think those were strategies that I used, but I talked to a lot of friends that were about 2 or 3 years ahead of me in the eating disorder recovery. And I would just say, so like the weight gain does stop. It stops sometime in the future. And everybody's like, yeah, eventually it does, or it doesn't. Like it's okay either way. I had to work through that, my own internalized fat phobia and anti-fat bias. And when you're doing that in recovery, man, it's hard. So hard. And then the other thing was that I took a course. So the Centers for Body Trust, I think that comes up in your podcast a few times, but Center for Body Trust is a group of people in Portland, and they have a course called No More Weighing, like standing on a scale weighing. And it had a toolkit in there that was a bad body day toolkit. Mm-hmm. And it was a way for when you're just having, no matter where you are in your cycle, in the cycle of healing, you will have a bad body day, like bad body image day will happen. What do you do when it happens? So there's a couple of poems. There was talking about the cycle of, you know, your clothes are too tight, then you want to start a new diet, then you're like, it doesn't work, and then you have to close it too tight. Like, it's just like you go through this whole thing and realizing that I know that's going to be the cycle every single time, but I cannot start this over again. I don't want to do it again. Like, it was a very clear moment in my head of, I can't restrict anymore. So what's the other option? And I knew if I was, and this is the other thing, I know it sounds, this is my internalized anti-fat bias, but I knew if I dieted and restricted again, that I would lose weight and then I would gain even more back. Like, it's happened every single time. So that, I know, I'm like saying this as someone who's like a mid-fat person. And it's like, but I don't want to get even fatter for like, it's weird to think, do you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to try not to be like, well, it's okay if you're larger, but I know if I continue restricting, it's just going to continue. It's going to be even harder. So why don't I just eat intuitively and move joyfully and all the things that I have learned, and just whatever happens, happens.
Well, you know, I think even for myself, you know, my own history, I think there's just that you've been feeling so in control with the eating disorder. And this is like the complete opposite. So I don't even think it's about what you're talking about. I think it's like losing complete control over everything and feeling like you're free falling and going, I don't know what's going to happen. And you want to have some sense of control of something. And so it's like holding on to anything, I think, is like just, yeah, I think it's just your body's out of control. It feels like you don't have rules anymore. All the rituals are gone. It's like, whoa, that's a lot. And so it's that makes complete sense to be like, I just want to control something, maybe, like,
right, something here, maybe. Anything? Yeah, that makes sense for sure. I agree completely. That resonates as well. Being in Portland was also, there was a lot of fat community there. Shout out to Chub Hub PDX, which is a local Facebook group there, that would put on a big pool party. We had camp. We had, like, it was just such an amazing place to go through recovery because there were so many people that were already there and were ahead of you. And how I got to change my practice to change the way I spoke about bodies. I changed the way I would talk to people about their injuries and about their knee pain or their back pain. And I will tell you, when I finally could just be my authentic self, like, and learn and be this person, my practice exploded with people. I mean, it was all of a sudden, because it was a slow build, but then all of a sudden, people are referring every friend, family member, you know, whatever, because they knew that they were safe there, that it wasn't going to be some lecture about your knee pain being caused by your size of your body. And when people could get ethical, evidence-based treatment for their musculoskeletal injuries, you know, they get better, like, no matter what size they're in. So, like, it's just, it was wild. And now I'm just opening, I just moved back to my hometown of Springfield, Missouri, which doesn't have the fat community. But the fun part is I feel like I get to build it. Like I'm here. I'm opening my own practice. It's all of my marketing is about weight neutral. People don't even know what that means here, but I get to tell them what it means. It's really exciting. And people have already started to find me. Like literally I've been open for 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And people are already starting to find me. Like, I saw something somewhere that you do this thing and I don't know exactly what it is, but it's very cool. And I don't know. It's very, what a joy to go from this to this. And it's so freeing and comfortable and relaxed and it feels so authentic. Ugh.
Well, yeah. But I mean, if we could talk, if we can get to the weeds a little bit about your practice,
yeah.
Because as before we hit record, we were talking a little bit about, some of the, I guess, beliefs in the medical field that are hurting people, I feel like, and literally hurting people, right? You brought up the knee pain and joint pain. And like my experience working at a hospital was people were being denied left and right, like for knee replacements, joint replacements, things that they actually needed for pain because of their BMI. And it would infuriate me, and I was constantly told the research shows that if they get this done, it's not going to, sustain the new knee or whatever. And it was like, where is this coming from? I didn't understand it. And I would just like to hear a little bit more from you about what you hear and see, because to me, I'm thinking it doesn't matter what someone's body size is. If their knee is hurting, their knee is hurting. And people of all shapes and sizes have knee pain.
Yes. The logic of it seems very clear because people of all sizes have all kinds of musculoskeletal injuries. Mm-hmm. But when you go into a hospital or an orthopedic, we'll talk more orthopedic setting because that's more what I do is in the musculoskeletal world. People walk into an orthopedic setting. One of them has a meniscus tear and degenerative arthritis in the knee, and they are thin, and maybe they're an athlete or something, mm-hmm. or they're not, they're just thin. The other one has the exact same thing with their fat. They will get completely different care. And that is unethical.
Yeah.
Because the research shows that when you do pursue intentional weight loss, a large percentage of what you lose is muscle mass. With the GLP-1s, it's 40%. With kind of the old model, I don't even know what, whatever it is, it's maybe like 25 to 30%, you lose muscle mass. But there are studies that show that we call sarcopenia, which is the muscle loss that you, that happens with intentional weight loss or with injury, is increased quite a bit. When you're trying to do intentional weight loss. So when you go into surgery after you've quote unquote lost the weight, like you've done the thing, they have studies that show like the outcome is worse because of the sarcopenia. But they just continue to blame the body, blame the person for not losing enough weight or something. So I've talked to some orthopedic surgeons about this, and they blame, they'll say things about like, oh, it won't last as long, but they often will say the risk for blood clots, for anesthesia issues, like their kind of their stats for how well they do are based off of the outcome of the surgery. And a lot of surgeons don't want their stats to get messed up. So they cherry pick the patients that will have better outcomes. That sounds like eugenics to me, but whatever. You're right. Like if you have knee pain, you need to first try the conservative methods, chiropractic, PT, acupuncture, massage, exercise therapy, all the things that we know work. And if it doesn't work, then you should be offered the surgery. And if you're worried about anesthesia risks, bring in one of the bariatric surgery anesthesiologists. Like they know how to do it. Like this is not the fault of the person. This is the system for not the doctors not being and the medical staff not being trained well enough how to treat larger bodies. That is a lack of education, and to blame the person and not the system it's just so unethical. I can't. I mean, at this point, I don't even know. But Regan Chastain, which I'm sure if friend of the pod, I'm sure, but her Substack Weight and Healthcare, she has some really great posts on how to deal with BMI-based medical denials because you do have some options. And I think that's really important because I tell my patients all the time, right now, if I needed a knee, if I at 42 years old needed a knee replacement at Kaiser, I couldn't get it. My BMI is too high. Doesn't matter. They were like, good luck. It's just like that. What is that? So when I tell people that, I use that as an example all the time. And they're like, wait, but you like are healthy or whatever. Like, it's just, they can't, like, breaks their brain. They don't even know what to do with it. But we need better education for our healthcare providers, of all types. So I'm a chiropractor. So I do, and actually I'll go into one thing that I'm just finished creating with my friend, Tiffany North. We created a continuing education credit for healthcare providers in the 2 credits, actually, in the state of Oregon. And we got it included in our cultural competency credit, continuing education, which is kind of like Oregon's DEI credit. So, you know, just taking care of diverse populations. In that application process, which was long and tedious, we had to answer a lot of questions, and we got some responses back that were interesting because even the board that is looking at diversifying and reducing shame and stigma for medical providers in the state of Oregon didn't think that providers needed more education on reducing weight stigma. And we were just like, wow. are you kidding me? They're like, but it's part of the education, kind of, in the org, you know. And it was just a very weird conversation, but we got it approved. Yay. So yay. That's going to be available. We have it, weight inclusive care training.com. We're getting that all up and running. Nice. So that'll be available and we'll satisfy those 2 credits, but it's just, even, we have a long way to go, but I am actually excited for the future on it. I think it has, we will reach the pinnacle of the GLP-1 in about 3 to 5 years, because that's how most people can't stay on them for that long. So it's going to have a fallout point. And right now there have been more deaths on GLP-1s than there were before they pulled FinFin. So it's kind of interesting. So I think that's, we're going to see a shift, and I'm ready to help healthcare providers know that it's okay to change your mind. It's okay to change how you practice. And when you bring weight inclusivity into your practice, it is very freeing. And you know what happens? Patients want to come see you, and they continue coming, and they get better, and they refer their friends. And that's like, what a dream to have people that actually have access to care and get better. It's really cool.
No, you're totally right. I get questions all the time. People saying, do you have any physicians I can see that like won't force the GLP-1 on me, or won't talk to me about my weight if I go in for like a cold or, you know, something else, because they're tired of getting the lectures or having that be part of the conversation. And people, you're right, they don't want to go to the doctor.
Uh-uh. And then that's another big part of it, because when people in larger bodies are so tired of feeling stigmatized and guilt-ridden by going to the doctor, they delay going to get treatment. They may have symptoms, but they're going to delay until the symptoms are bad enough that they then require treatment. And then when they get to the doctor's office, they get blamed for not coming in earlier, and they get blamed for being larger again. So it's the system, it's just self-perpetuating, because if then you delay treatment, you're in a worse state coming in, which means it's harder to treat, and the likelihood of it improving with conservative management, whatever it is, we can go any condition that's quote unquote related to health, to weight. It's so then people, they just say, well, I'll just get worse. Like they just, it's just like you just give up. And it's really sad, because if we could just have access to the care we needed at an earlier phase, the better outcome would be. And then we wouldn't get blamed so much, but it's just a big cycle.
Yeah, I know. I mean, this conversation needs to just keep being had, and like, we need to keep talking, because unfortunately, you know, as to your point, the big conversation now is like perpetuating that, oh, you can only be healthy if you're in a smaller body. Thanks, GLP-1s, right? Like, and that's really, that's not true. It's the opposite to your point. Like, people are getting sick. They're dying. Like, we're not talking about that so much as just being so promoted as this great, wonderful thing. And
Yeah. And you know, and so now they're using the medication and weight loss surgery too. They use it as a, Reagan Chastain always says they're holding your health hostage for a weight loss ransom, right? Like, so, but the thing is about the GLP-1, and this is really quick, just basic, but something that I thought was really interesting, is that only 10% or less than 10% of people can lose more than 20% of their body weight. So people that are like, why don't you go on a GLP-1 before your knee surgery? And we'll see how much, you know, maybe you can qualify if you lose enough weight. So they're given this false promise that, okay, if I'm on this medication, I can get down, I can lose the X amount of pounds. But then they're one of the 90 or 80% of people that can't lose the over 20%. Then now what? Like, you just had to take the medication for a year. Your condition got worse. Your cartilage got, you know, like, it happens. It just gets worse. Mm-hmm. And then you maybe have side effects from the medication. And as soon as you go off the medication, you gain weight back 4 times faster, is what they're saying. And most of it was muscle, and you won't get that back within the four. It's mind numbing. So I'm not anti-medication. I think that there's definitely for diabetes, but if we can't think logically about how to use this medication to reduce the side effects and increase efficacy, then like, we're not getting the informed consent. And I will shout out, so the Medical Students for Size Inclusivity is an organization that created a informed consent document on their website. I should put it in the show notes. It is okay. Really, really helpful for other providers if you're prescribing or not, because I'm not a prescriber. But I have to talk, I'm having informed consent conversations about the medication because no one else is. I have to. So I had to learn a lot, and I'm not trying to say that I never tell someone to not take a medication because I can't do that with my license, but I can at least give them that document. They can have a conversation with their prescribing provider and know that it's people like, I'm just going to take one for a few months. And I'm just like, research is really clear. You get off of it and then the weight comes back. Like, it's not how you take it. I don't know. So
yeah,
I won't go too more into that.
No, but I think you're right. Is the informed consent really knowing and understanding what it is that's going on? And so great work with people. And you're like, I mean, congrats on your course being approved and all the work you're doing. And thank you for sharing your story too, because I think, you know, the more people talk about their experience, the more people can relate and maybe see themselves and hopefully like make a change in their life. So, I mean, truly appreciate you being open and honest about what you went through.
Yeah. And as a healthcare provider, like, just being in a larger body as a healthcare provider, we are the minority in healthcare, like, especially higher level doctorate and above. There's not very many fat doctors. There's not very many of us. And there's a lot of reasons why that is. I think like there's a lot of gatekeeping in medical especially. But so I feel like it's so nice to be able to share that experience, but also to other young people that are wanting to get into healthcare. Like, I literally thought when I was young, I knew I was going to be a doctor. I thought people weren't going to listen to me, or like, they wouldn't, like, I wasn't healthy enough to be a doctor. This was part of the reason, I'm sure, I was like, I just always searching for how to be smaller, because I wanted to be the best doctor I could. But it was actually the best doctor I could be was when I started like not dieting and like being authentic and showing up for my patients and showing them like, hey, I've been there. I'm ahead of you by 10 years. Let me guide you that this is possible. You don't have to hate your body anymore. Like, what a dream. Like, I feel like as a health at every size practitioner, we have so much to give. And to give back to people because it's been taken from them their entire lives. Like, I have women in their 80s that are still dieting that I'm like, dude, can we stop? You know, is it possible that we just eat a piece of cake? It's all right, you know? So I encourage other healthcare providers, if you're not sure on how to make that transition out of weight-centric care. I mean, it is hard, but it is not impossible. And I think that you will be so much happier on the other side.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, you're such a joy to talk to.
Thank you.
Truly. So I will get the links from you so that people can access your course and informed consent as well, so that people can see that, because I think those are great resources. So thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Any last final words before we end?
I think that when we're going through this in front of other people, you're going through your eating disorder recovery or your practice shift or whatever it is, unlearning an old model. Mm. It's okay to show a little bit of that vulnerability with your patients and your friends, because as healthcare providers, when we're treating patients, it's really hard not to, I mean, it's easy to just block off everything about us. But when you're seeing your patients, I see my patients pretty frequently, you know, it's just more frequently than say their primary care. And so whenever I could share just a little bit, not so much that I'm divulging all my information, but sharing just a little bit about my story, the trust that you can build with your patients is so incredible, and what they choose to give back to you, and that now you can help them even further. I mean, it's so exciting. And that's why I know that this, it will continue, because more providers are going to figure out that it's not very fun to treat in that their model, because patients don't want to talk to you and they don't want to tell you the truth. And when you open it up, it's like, oh my gosh, what a dream. So I'm really excited about the future of that. I know it's a hard time to be excited about the future, but I really am. I think there's more of us talking and more of us having these conversations. Man, I'm so excited.
No, let's get excited for sure. Yeah. Awesome. Well, Jenny, thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it. And anyone who wants to get in touch with her, I'll have all her contact information in the notes. So thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening today. Behind the Bite podcast is created by me, Dr. Christina Castanini, as part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network and produced by the Tweaky Tales. I love hearing from my listeners. So if you like the show, please like, rate, and subscribe to it on whatever platform you're on. And for anyone who wants to understand their relationship with food better, or who might be wondering if they have an eating disorder, I have a free 9-week e-course at my website. Just go to www.behindthebitepodcast.com to get your free e-course today. Please note, this podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regard to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither host, the publisher, or the guests are rendering legal, clinical, or other professional information. If you want or need a professional, you should find one to work with who can address your individual needs and situation.